At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome to segment 4 of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Sir.
Thank you. Your next witness.
Your Honor, the state calls Dr. Ellen Raymer.
Hold a moment, ma'am. Do you witness, right?
Yes.
Raise your right hand. Left hand on the Bible. Do you affirm your testimony like the witness swore that this trial shall be the truth to help you die?
Yes.
Take a seat in the witness stand. Adjust the microphone if you have to.
State your name again for the record. Sign your last name.
Yes. Hi. My name is Dr. Ellen Reamer, R-I-E-M-E-R.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
I'm going to go ahead and get right to it. And if you would, just tell the jury a little bit about your education that led up to you becoming a physician, please.
Yes, okay. Well, I graduated from medical school in 1997 with a Doctor of Medicine degree. Following that, I did a residency in pathology at New York Presbyterian Hospital, Columbia University Medical Center in the city of New York. Following that, I did a forensic pathology fellowship at the Office of the Chief Medical Examiner of the State of Maryland. Following that, I did an additional fellowship training year at Johns Hopkins Hospital, Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine, also in Baltimore. And I am board certified in forensic pathology and anatomic pathology. After I completed my all my education and fellowship training, I took my first job as a forensic pathologist at Wake Forest University Baptist Medical Center, Wake Forest University School of Medicine in North Carolina, where I remained for almost 6 years, but before being recruited by the Medical University of South Carolina in Charleston, where I've been for 14 years as a forensic pathologist.
All right, and at the Medical University of South Carolina, you said you're a forensic pathologist. Do you have any professorship or teaching responsibilities
there?
Yes.
So I have also the title of professor of pathology and laboratory medicine. And because Medical University of South Carolina is a teaching institution, I am responsible for educating physicians in training as well as medical students, and that's an integral part of my job. So a lot of the work I do is observed by students and trainees.
And you mentioned you had some board certifications. Can you tell those to the jury, please?
Yes. So you know, in order for somebody, the American Board of Pathology is the organization that certifies specialists in different fields, and the American Board of Pathology certifies specialists in pathology and requires them to take very long examinations and demonstrate and pass those examinations. And you can't just sit down and take them. You have to have achieved, gotten through your residency training and fellowship training as well. So I managed to do all of that. And I'm board certified in forensic pathology. Yes.
And do you have any membership or involvement in any professional societies that are relevant to what we're talking about here?
Yes. Well, I'm a member of the American Academy of Forensic Sciences. And I also am responsible for editing journals. I have various academic responsibilities as well.
All right. And you mentioned editing certain journals. Have you published in the field of pathology over the years, given your professorships and your education expertise?
Yes. Because I'm interested in, educating the medical community, I published close to, I don't remember the exact number, but approximately 30 publications in the fields of pathology and forensic pathology. And this is also something that's valued at an academic institution, so you're not just practicing but also contributing to the body of knowledge in your field.
Over the years with this this experience, have you had call to conduct a number of autopsies?
Yes. So the principal responsibility of my work is to perform autopsies on deceased individuals in order to determine the cause and manner of death. And over the course of my career, don't keep exact track, but I estimate that I've done approximately 5,500 autopsies.
5,500?
Correct.
All right, and we'll talk more about what an autopsy is in a minute. Over that course of time doing 5,500 autopsies, have you been qualified as an expert and testified in courts of record in the nation?
Yes. So, again, I'm not keeping track of every single one, but if a conservative estimate would be approximately once a month for more than 20 years, which would put me in the mid 200, so about 250, but that's probably a little bit more than that.
And that's times you've been qualified as an expert in forensic pathology?
Yes.
And is that just in South Carolina, or have there been other places?
The majority have been in South Carolina, but also North Carolina. Where I practiced for 6 years prior to moving to South Carolina. And I've also been admitted as an expert witness in forensic pathology in federal court a couple of times where I autopsied individuals who died on tribal lands.
Your Honor, this time the state would move to qualify Dr. Reamer, Professor Reamer, as an expert in forensic pathology.
No objection, Your Honor.
She's so qualified.
All right, Dr. Reamer, before we get to your specific findings in this case, can you quickly describe to the jury what is pathology and what is an autopsy? What is it that your science and being a physician, what are you trying to do?
Yes. So the purpose of an autopsy is to obtain as much information as I can from examination of the tissues of the body and in order to come to a determination of the cause and manner of death. And the autopsy examination is basically a specialized surgical procedure. It starts with an external examination, so before any cuttings get started, I look from head to toe. I look for anything unusual. If there's injuries, I review them. I look at them carefully and document those findings as well as establish an opinion on how injuries may have occurred.
And obviously, because in cases where you have traumatic injury, there's no getting around the fact that it's very graphic, the things that you have to look at and the things here today that you have to describe to the jury.
Yes, that's just part of it.
Did you have call in this particular case to examine the victims of these murders, Paul Murdoch and Maggie Murdoch?
Yes. I have the name is Margaret Murdoch. I know she goes by Maggie, but Margaret Murdoch as well as Paul Murdoch. I performed the autopsies on both of these individuals.
All right. And do you recall what day that was?
I'll have to refer to my notes. Both of the autopsies on both Paul and Maggie were performed by me on June 10th, 2021.
And is it typical when you're conducting an autopsy that you have assistants there that assist you in performing these procedures and that sort of thing?
Yes. So I have assistants to help me with whatever I need. And the autopsies, I do the autopsy, and any assistance I need is done under my direction.
Sure. And then is it common that photographs are taken of the various injuries and your various findings as you do the autopsy?
Yes.
All right. And if any physical evidence is recovered during that autopsy, is law enforcement present or some official there to take custody of those sorts of things?
They're not always present, but if they're not present at the day of the autopsy, they'll come back, and I seal all of the evidence up and in secure bags, and then those are transferred to the appropriate investigator.
Well, let's go ahead and get to it, and we're going to talk about Paul Murdoch first, okay?
Okay.
And we also, do we have some poster boards behind you? And the first one is marked as States 500, and can you explain very quickly what this is to the jury, please?
Okay. So you may have seen these kinds of diagrams. These are blank body diagrams, and so when I autopsy a man or a male, I start with that diagram, and it's basically a vehicle for me to take notes during the autopsy so I can incorporate findings into my final autopsy report. But this is not, something that this is really for my edification, and so I can write things down, and it helps me when I write the autopsy report and, to make sure I've covered everything.
And will this assist you as we, as you explain to the jury the injuries that the two victims suffered?
Yes.
Dr. Reamer, let's again, starting with Paul, if you could very quickly, how many, did you observe any gunshot wounds to Paul?
Well, actually, there were two shotgun wounds, so that's different than a handgun, or so a shotgun is where there, there's basically pellets that are enclosed in a wadding, and the wadding, after it's fired from the shotgun, kind of opens up and allows all these pellets to be released from the wadding. And so the features of his injuries told me in no uncertain terms that he was shot with a shotgun.
And if I could ask you with the court's permission, if you could step down. I'm going to hold up this board, and if you could bring a marker with you. I've got a red Sharpie right here if that helps you. And let's talk about the injuries that you observed to Paul Murdoch. And then if you could, for the jury, if you could illustrate, draw on this board that the first shotgun wound that you observed on Paul.
I'll use my
markers. All right. Let me put mine up real quick.
Okay. Okay, so in order to make things as clear to you as possible, I'm going to use a black marker for an entrance wound and red for exit, okay? So just arbitrarily. Okay, so Paul had two shotgun wounds. One of them was to the left side of the chest, approximately this location. And the wadding containing the pellets traveled beneath the skin through like the soft tissue of the left side of the chest. It didn't actually go into the chest cavity, but traveled beneath the skin and through the muscle and fat. Before exiting the left axillary region, okay, so it's kind of a straight kind of left to right, right to left shot. And
Just real quick, when you say right to left, you're talking about Paul's right to
yeah,
left.
Yeah, that's right. So I'm always thinking about like the patient's right to left. Okay, it's not, if we look at it, it's from, you know, would be from left to right. But I always, we always, for consistency, it's always relative to his body.
Down here by the hands, could you put an R on one side and an L on the
yeah,
other?
Sure.
Just because I know I get confused.
Yeah, no, it is. And honestly, we all do this during autopsies as well, because especially we have the back and. It's very easy to make a mistake.
And also, just real quick, could you write Paul up at the top there? All right, thank you. All right, so you were talking about that first shotgun wound to the chest and where it exited. Were
yes.
there any other injuries associated with that? Please continue on.
Yes, so the remember we had wadding and closing pellets. The wadding actually got stuck, you know, didn't completely exit and continue to fly out. It got stuck right underneath the skin of the left side of the chest, like close to the armpit area. And we have a photograph of that pink wadding that remained in the skin of the exit wound. From there, multiple of the shotgun pellets started going through like the left arm. Okay, starting from the underside of the left arm, so the wadding terminated in the skin, and then pellets kind of went out and went through the left arm. So this is the left. Remember, this is his left side, his left shoulder, his left arm, and then we've got a bunch of exit pellet wounds on the left side of the arm, and some also a little bit on the back. So that, you can see this is going through, and then this is actually on the inside of the arm, and the exits are kind of on the left side. So,
was there any stippling associated with this particular wound?
Yes, okay, so there was stippling, and I'll draw that over here, okay? So when a projectile comes out of the barrel of a weapon, be it a shotgun, a handgun, an assault rifle, what propels that projectile, we call, you know, projectile out of the barrel of the gun? Okay, it's gunpowder. And gunpowder is basically ignited through the action of the shooter with on the gun. And so gunpowder is basically burning and projects the projectile out of the barrel of the gun. A projectile can potentially travel a very long distance, like, you know, many feet or, you know, yards or a long, depending on the projectile, until it hits something. Or if it doesn't hit anything, it could eventually lose power and go to the ground. But the gunpowder that leaves the barrel of the weapon can travel not too far. It only travels about up to 3 feet, depending on the weapon. So in this case, we actually have some particles of, like abrasions from particles of gunpowder. And this is called gunpowder stippling. Okay, so we have stippling, which indicates that this wound was fired at a fairly close range. We can't say exactly, but probably no more than 3 feet, because that's our standard. You know, could be anywhere from 2 to 3 feet. Interestingly enough, there was some markings on the edge of this kind of cookie cutter type of defect from the wadding going in that shows that some of the petals of the wadding are beginning to open. So this is very classic for a shotgun entrance wound, and at the autopsy shows that it went after going through the underneath the left side of the chest, it went through the left arm.
All right. And let me ask you this, and before we look at some of the pictures, which are very graphic, is that correct?
Yes, it's just the nature of the beast.
Okay. If this particular injury, was it immediately fatal?
No. Amazingly enough, this really, if that was all he sustained, he would have needed medical attention and some stitches and irrigation of the wound to clean it out, to make sure he doesn't get infected. But it it actually did not pierce the chest or cause any internal bleeding. It did, however, cause a bruise or contusion of the left lung, and that's because, you know, the there's a lot of energy associated with this, but didn't actually go through the ribs, but caused a contusion of the left lung. But he would have been expected to be continue to be standing after this. It would not have sent him to the ground.
All right. If you could, there's a dowel stick over by your witness stand, and I'm going to make sure the jurors down here could see what you're talking about. If you could grab that for me real quick, and then we'll look at some of the pictures here.
Okay, what do you want me to do?
Well, I just wanted to show it to these jurors down here just to make sure they could see what you were doing. And then if you could just stay standing for me, I'm going to give an exhibit just to back in real quick about the room. Careful to keep these pointed this way if you could, but I'm going to have you just look through states 478, 479, 480, 481, and 482 and see if you recognize those images.
Okay. So these are photographs.
And just real quick, just tell me if you recognize them.
Yes. I recognize all of them.
All right. And these images that were taken during the autopsy you conducted of Paul Murdoch?
Yes.
All right, and would they assist you in explaining the injuries to the jury?
Yes.
All right, Your Honor, this time I've moved states 478, 479, 480, 481, and 482 into evidence.
No objection, Your Honor.
Admitted without objection.
All right. Now, Dr. Green, if you get the dowel stick and come around here to this screen, I'm going to put this first image up on the Elmo, and then if you could, we'll talk a little bit about these injuries and describe them to the jury.
Okay. So we can see, it's not great focus here, but this is the entrance shotgun wound on the left side of the chest. His left nipple is over here, so it's the left side of the chest. And there is some stippling around
it. And Dr. Rumor, I apologize.
Okay.
If you could come around and work this way so that all our jurors who are that way can see.
Okay.
Awesome.
All right. So... the shotgun wound is going in this direction. Remember, it exited that left side of the chest and then continued through the left arm. So that is a photograph of that wound, to the shotgun wound to the chest.
All right. And we'll see some more close-up images here in a minute, but... this is the entrance wound right here, is that correct?
Yes.
And then we have some injuries right here. Is that where those petals exited
into
the arm?
That is where the, the wadding, which is the plastic piece enclosing the pellets, terminated in the skin. It just didn't manage to get out. But all those pellets kind of got released from the wadding and went through the left arm.
I'm going to move. That was states 478 for the record. I'm going to move now to states 479. And what is this image?
Okay. So this is a more close-up view of the entrance wound. And you can see that it looks like there's little, like almost squares or pegs sticking out of the edge. And that tells us that the wadding is starting to open because it opens up. It kind of opens up. There's petals, and this is a classic. I could put it in a book to say that this is consistent with a shotgun entrance wound. Okay, and we can see the dots around here. Those are from pieces of of gunpowder that have basically impacted the skin because it's within a distance of 3 feet or so.
Moving now to States 480.
Okay. So usually when I take a photo, I don't want to go too close because then you won't be able to see where it is on the body. But here, this is recognized, this is the nipple, right? His left nipple. And we saw the entrance wound over here. And so here we have the, this is the an exit wound where this pink wadding is basically stuck right there. And you can see these are the petals on the edge, and that's what gave that unique appearance to the entrance wound. Now, this is basically a cylinder that encloses lots of pellets. And then the pellets here, we start to actually have some of the pellets coming through the surrounding skin and then along the left side of the lateral side of the chest, kind of below the armpit area.
All right, and I'm going to show you what's been marked as States 111, already in evidence at this time. Do you recognize that?
Yes, so that is the wadding that I recovered at autopsy and took a picture of it before I recovered it, so that's the wadding that was from Paul's chest.
And just again, point out where that is in that image, please.
Yeah, so here it is. It's kind of peeking out through this big hole in the left side of the chest.
All right, let me move on to the next exhibit. I'm going to put up on the screen now States 481. And tell me what this image
Okay.
Right.
So this is a photograph of the same wadding, but I'm taking it from a different angle. Okay. So he's lying on an autopsy table, and I've moved his arm up to show the relationship of this wadding with the entrance pellet wounds on the underside of the left arm. And interestingly enough, a lot of times pellets just go through the skin, but here we have some abrasions around the skin, and it actually corresponds to abrasions. We normally don't have abrasions with an exit wound, such as we have here, but the fact that we have abrasions on the underside of the left side of the chest corresponding to the inside of the arm indicates that his arm was down at the time of this injury.
So let me ask you about that. In your expert opinion, having done 5,500 autopsies, is there any way that Paul's hands were up when he suffered that shotgun wound to the chest that you've been talking about?
No. The autopsy answers that question, that his arm was down by his side at the time he sustained this injury.
And again, highlight the specific features that you observed that caused you to come to that expert opinion.
So if, let's just say hypothetically, if his arm was up, you see all of these abrasions around this exit defect and the abrasions around these pellet entrances. We wouldn't see that because those are caused by when these pellets and the wadding is pressing up against the skin is very elastic. So this is just kind of logic. I think you're all going to get this. It's kind of going to push the skin before it actually exits. The skin's going to stretch a lot. And if it hits up against the other portion of the skin, we have kind of abrasions, which are kind of scrapes on the skin around where it exited as well as where it entered. So these are sometimes called it's a shored exit wound. So the skin actually struck another area, and in fact it corresponds exactly. It's like a reflection. We can see this is reflected. This one is reflected over here. So if we can only get that kind of a mark if his arm is down. Now this is the kind of thing that, you know, it's the logical conclusion, and I'm confident that was the position of his arm at the time he was shot. And this is based on my training and more than 20 years of experience doing these cases.
All right. Let me look at the next exhibit, which will be 482 for the record. And tell us what you see here, and also, if you could, how that also supports the conclusions you were just talking about to
yes.
the jury.
Okay. So these are the exit pellet wounds on the outside of the arm in this area, right? So this is kind of like his armpit here. And we can see these are kind of just, these pellet exit wounds don't have the kind of abrasions around it. This is just kind of finding its way through the skin. And then this one is over here. So, and if the further the pellets travel, it kind of splays out. So after the pellets leave the wadding that is open, there's spread. So, but these are, exit pellet wounds, and we don't have the kind of abrasions to suggest that his arm was pressed up against anything at the time that those pellets exited.
All right. One other thing as well is when talking about his arm being down, of course, the wadding stopped in that wound still in his chest, correct?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Let's move on. Just give me 1 second here to get some other exhibits and show them to defense counsel. All right, Dr. Reamer, if I could get you maybe to stand that way just a little bit. I know we're in tight confines, and then we're trying to be as respectful as we can with these images. I'm going to show you now what's been marked as 483, states 484, states 485, 486, and 487. And just quickly tell me if you recognize those, and then I want to go back to the board before we talk about those pictures.
Yes, I recognize these.
All right, and those autopsy photographs that you took of
yes.
Paul Murdoch?
These are photographs that I took at the autopsy of Paul Murdoch.
And would they assist you and explain to the jury the injuries that he suffered?
Yes.
Your Honor, this time I'd move states 483, 484, 485, 486, and 487 into evidence.
No objection, Your Honor.
They are admitted.
And Your Honor, I think all these exhibits, both he and I, 90% of them we're introducing, will be under seal.
Yes, sir, and for the record, These are under seal, and I provided the cover sheets to the court reporter. Every exhibit except for the poster board that we're doing, the state would request to be under seal because of their graphic nature. All right, Dr. Reamer, and we'll come back a little bit more to that first injury, but there was a second shotgun injury as well. Is that correct?
Correct.
All right, and I'm going to go back to states 500, which is the poster board, and if you could, explain to and draw on this diagram that second injury, and then
okay.
we'll look at the pictures.
So there was a large shotgun wound defect to the top of his left shoulder. And there were lots of pellets recovered in the left shoulder area. And from there, the kind of just went across the top of the left shoulder and then went into the left side of the neck and face. Okay, and from there, his face actually was not destroyed from this, but there's a big exit wound on the top of the right side of the head. So this wound went from his left toward his right and upward and with a slight front to back deviation. Now, what does that tell us? We don't really know. It's kind of going toward, it's sparing his face, it's going behind the face. Now, one thing that makes sense to me, how could that happen? If he was just standing, not everybody gets shot like standing like these diagrams, right? But if he was shot and his face was forward, it would have taken off a lot of his face. However, if he is turned toward the shooter, then it's going to go into the face here and go out toward the right back of the head. So to me, it makes sense that his head is turned to the left. Not necessarily completely, but partially turned to the left. And what happened here was an extremely severe, immediately fatal injury, because what it did was that after it went through the left side of the neck and face, our brain is basically held up through the skull. So we have bone at the top of the skull, but then we also have a bone that kind of holds up the brain. It went through the base of the skull, okay, which is kind of like in this area, the brain is up there. And this wound, actually, his brain was ejected out of the top of the right side of his head and actually arrived at the autopsy in a separate bucket. So this, the force of this wound actually pushed the brain out of his head. There was only just a small piece of brain remaining, and that's the brain stem that was attached to the spinal cord.
All right, and real quickly, going back to the first wound to the chest, if Paul was standing when he suffered that, could he have remained standing after suffering that wound?
Yes.
All right. The second wound, the one that starts in the shoulder and goes in here and then out the top of his head, what would have been the effect of that wound?
That would have been immediately fatal, and he would not have been standing. He would have just fallen to the ground.
All right, and would he have been capable at all of bracing his fall or anything like that with a catastrophic injury like that?
No, that's instantaneous death.
Did you notice any abrasions on his face or anything like that?
Yes, he did have, and it's depicted in one of the photographs. Yeah. He does have a kind of a scrape on his face, and very frequently scrapes on the face that it has a slight directionality. It's consistent with a terminal collapse. So if he's hitting the ground with some movement, there's frequently kind of a linear pattern. And, you know, all of this really makes sense. Once you see these things, you can understand that if somebody's going to fall with, the force of their body, and they're going to hit their face on the ground, and we get some abrasions that correspond to that.
All right. And let me do this real quick. If you could grab that dowel stick for me, and I'm going to make sure the jurors down here had a chance to see what you've been drawing.
Okay.
So that's the shoulder right there, and then...
Yeah, I should have made a red mark here to be consistent. This is the exit wound on the right side of the head, and the brain came out of that exit.
Now you mentioned a little bit about being consistent with Paul kind of having his head tilted to one side. If you could use the dowel stick, maybe use me as an example, and show me kind of what you're talking about. You can position me however you want to.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go out here just a little bit.
So we'll start with like a different idea, okay, in order to understand how that's the case. So if a shotgun wound is entering the top of the left shoulder, and let's say his head is turned like that, it's going to go right through the face, right? But if his head is turned like that, it's going to spare the face and be able to go behind the face. So if somebody's just standing looking straight ahead, this most likely would have done a lot of damage to his face. But the fact that the face is remained intact tells me that his head was, up or down, but his head was facing in the direction from where the shotgun was being fired.
And then the injury to the shoulder would have been where? If you just pointed with it.
Yes. So it's kind of on the top of the shoulder. This also did not injure his chest cavity. It kind of went through a lot of the skin and muscle and fat of the left shoulder. And there were a lot of pellets that were recovered from the left shoulder area as well as the head and neck.
And I'm going to show you very quickly what's been marked as stakes 110. And do you recognize this item, Marty, in evidence?
Yes, these are the pellets that I recovered from the left shoulder and head area.
All right. I'm going to go ahead, and if you could stay on that side so the jurors can see, and I'm going to...
This side?
Yeah, if you could work on this side so that the jurors down on that end can see, and I'm going to look at some of these. All right, and I'm going to show you first what's been marked as States 483. And can you tell me what's on this particular image, particularly as to some of the things you were just describing as to the abrasion and things like that?
Yes. So we can see this is basically an abrasion. It's a fancy word for scrape. So there are scrapes on the right side of his face. And you can see they kind of have, you can kind of see that there's a little bit of linearity. So if he just felt completely flat, we might just get dots. But if there's some movement, we get, it's kind of, he's hitting the ground and then moving a little bit as his face hits. So we get this kind of vertical direction. And this is a very typical type of injury to the face that somebody might suffer from a terminal collapse. So after they sustained a fatal injury, what are they going to do? They're going to fall to the ground. Now, depending on the surface of, you know, if it's concrete or, you know, grass, we might get some. But this is very typical of, I don't know what kind of surface it was, but a terminal collapse.
Okay. All right, if you would... with this image, and this would be States 484, please explain to the jury using this image some of the concepts that you've been describing to them.
So this is the top of his left shoulder, and this is the continuation of the ammunition through the left side of the lower face, and from there, it proceeded behind the face through the base of the skull and exited the right side of the top of the head and sort of toward the back of the right side of the top of the head.
And those two sort of together, they are, that's kind of what you described before when you had positioned my head in the manner in which you did.
Yeah, that's right. So my head turned to the left like that. I think that makes the most logical sense, and forensic pathology is really logical. So when we look at these things, we have to think, well, how could this have happened? And, after the, it's not always immediately obvious, but, you know, with some thought, we can come to these conclusions with confidence.
Turning now to States 485.
So this is the same injury. This is formed by a single piece of ammunition here that went through the top of the left shoulder, tore it up, right, and then went into the left side of his face and neck. And some of these pellets also did a lot of damage in the neck because they kind of splay out as they go further. And some of them went actually through his airway and other structures of the neck, as well as continuing through the base of the skull and propelling the majority of the brain out the right side of the back of the head.
Now, going to the end of that particular wound, tell us what this image represents.
So, you can kind of see, it looks like this piece of his head. We're not really seeing the entire thing because his forehead is basically still intact. But you can appreciate at this point that, the contours of his skull are disrupted. And that's because there's a defect at the top of the skull, but not involving the forehead, so it's kind of in the back. So we know it started at the shoulder, it's exiting in the back, so his head may have been like that, facing toward the left.
States 486, and finally States 487.
Okay, now this is, so this is...
It's hard for me to see what I'm doing.
It's okay. Yep. Yeah. So this is actually a photograph of the right side of this is his the face area, okay, and I know that because I usually, when I take a photograph of the number, I usually have it like right side up, okay? So this is the top of his head, and this is...
Dr. Reamer, I apologize.
No,
Yeah,
that's good,
better.
Right. So now you can sort of see this is the right side of his head, and it's horrible, I know. And there's a big defect there. And we can see the inside of the skull, and but it, you know, his face was spared. So,
all right, Dr. Reamer, if you would, that's all the images I have right now.
Excuse me.
Okay. The jury room for a few moments. Please not discuss the case.
That wraps up the fourth segment of our continuing coverage in the trial of Alec Murdaugh. There is more to come. Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. Tony Bruschi, stay with us.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care. Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.